All right, welcome to the Press Play Podcast, where we basically teach you guys the ins and outs of the music industry, talk about your favorite artists, talk about the secrets of the music millionaires and industry elite, and if you are an indie artist, indie label, or a seasoned veteran, give you the ins and outs of what you need to be doing for your music business and how you can make that happen and achieve the success that you're actually looking for. What we really understand about it is that many people have the ability, if they have determination, they have the stamina to stick it through, and they have the information. And so it takes all of these different things for you guys to be successful in your music career. And so we are going to teach you that in this particular podcast, or we'll do the best that we can. If you want to know who I am, my name is SG1. I'm from the Grammy Award-winning team, The Peacemakers. Me and Sly Piper Jordan created The Peacemakers well over 10 years ago in an attempt to become songwriters for the guys that we admire, the industry, you know what I mean? And we were able to achieve that once we had a better understanding of how the music industry works. And so, you know, after we achieved it, I set out my goal to be basically to help you guys and share the information that I had, because I was meeting so many different talented producers and artists and musicians and songwriters who needed and deserve a fair chance in the industry. But if they did not know or did not align themselves the proper way, I knew that they would not succeed. So I made it my duty to start a YouTube channel called Music Millionaires. And Music Millionaires is basically the premise to where I see you guys becoming, or what I see you guys becoming. It's my way of basically pulling my version of the secret, okay, for you guys by saying Music Millionaires, talking to it existence, see it and it will happen. However, let's start this way. Real quick, have to give a shout out to my sponsor, DistroKid, who, you know, is the sponsor of this show, and that's going to make this happen for you guys. DistroKid is a company that I definitely recommend, because as musicians, you know, one simple thing is you can have all the talent in the world, but if your music is not out there, if it's not available for people to be able to actually download it and get a hold of it, then you're doing it all for naught, because you want to eventually monetize your money and make money from, monetize your music and eventually make money off of your effort. A lot of us have passion, we have drive, but we don't necessarily know how to get our music into the marketplace. And while there is a lot of different avenues that you can take, my recommendation is DistroKid. And if you sign up and show support, what basically happens, if you go into our description of this podcast, you can find a link that will get you 7% off your first year. Now, let me talk about the first year real quick. The first year is only like $19.99, okay? And that gets you the opportunity to be able to distribute your music on iTunes, Napster, and all your favorite places, Deezer, Google Play Store, wherever you want, basically. And it's unlimited. That's the best part about it. It's unlimited, and you're not going to find that anywhere else. So if you do nothing else, please go show some support at DistroKid so that we can keep these podcasts going, because DistroKid helped us pay the bills here. All right, and contrary to what you believe, even though we are music millionaires, you know, it takes money to be able to put these podcasts out, to give you guys what you need, and you just show support by showing our sponsor some support. So if you don't mind, stop by DistroKid and click on the link to get your VIP access. Now, with that said, I would also like to talk about, if you want to show support in other ways, if you want to just contribute $1 or $2 or whatever you can afford to us, there is a QR code in the description below. I'm working with my guy and my friend, Orlando. He has a great app called Much Love. All right. And Much Love allows you to be able to support your favorite artist, your band, or whoever. And so, guys, go to Much Love if you don't want to, or you've already purchased from DistroKid. You can utilize Much Love to say, hey, you know, SG, appreciate what you guys are doing and you're trying to do by teaching and educating us producers and musicians and artists as a whole. And it would mean a lot to me for you guys to do that. So go down in the description. You will see the QR code for Much Love. go into the description and download the Much Love app to show support for us. And it doesn't matter what you donate, $1, $1.50, $2, it doesn't matter. All of it will be appreciated. And we are working with the team at Much Love to even make a better app. So the app will be filled with, oh my God, so much stuff that we've talked about to try and make it something different for you guys. You know, not just a, you know, Patreon type situation. And I have nothing against Patreon by far, okay? So I don't want you to think I do. But Much Love is going to be so much more than just a way that you can support your favorite band or a production team or a favorite artist. It will definitely develop into something that I think will be futuristic and really needed for fans who want to be able to have that personal connection with their favorite artist or band. So download your version of, or download a version of Much Love on your phone, whether it's Android or iOS, and come show some love. Now, I know a lot of you guys are saying, like, okay, SG, we have seen you on YouTube. We might follow you on Twitter. We see you on Instagram. You know, why should we follow you on your podcast? And the reason why you should follow me on my pack, and so the reason why I think you should follow me on my podcast is real simple. I myself do a lot of traveling, or when I'm working, I listen to podcasts. I listen to paranormal stuff. I listen to music industry stuff. I listen to YouTube stuff. I listen to a ton of stuff on podcasts. And I do it because basically when I'm driving, and I do a lot of traveling, or when you're on the plane, you know, you want to be entertained. And especially when you're driving. If you're driving, it's not safe to be watching videos. You can't watch videos and be driving at the same time. So I think a podcast is a simplified way to get you guys the same information and expand. You know what I mean? I'm really big on expanding, because one thing about YouTube is the attention level is so short when it comes to video watching. You know, if you're not putting out a documentary, or if you're not actually watching a movie, little DIYs, you know, doesn't require or shouldn't require a lot of your time. But when you are driving and you are doing other things, more on the lawn, you know, a lot of times we want to be entertained. We listen to our favorite music, or we listen to, you know, whatever entertains us. And so the podcast is just a way for us to be able to tap into you guys when you just want to maybe learn something while laying down or meditating or whatever it may be. I don't want to get too much in detail, because I think you get the gist of what I'm saying. And so that's the reason behind the podcast and why we created it. Now, I think it's fair that the first episode basically be a backstory, because if you're going to be listening to me, you should at least get a chance to know who I am, you know, what this is all about, where did this come from, you know, and for those of you who don't really know who I am or don't know my backstory, this will allow you to be able to have at least a portion of understanding to who I am. And you know, it's so much more, and it's so much deeper than I can really give you in this particular episode. But I will do my best to at least give you guys a synopsis to me. And again, you know, it's within depth and detailed. It's so much to share, man, and ups and downs, and friendships, and bad friendships, and bad decisions, and simplicities in life, and thinking you know someone, and a whole bunch of stuff that I could share, but I'm not. I ain't create no haterism around here. So I don't even know if that's still a word, but anyway, the backstory is real simple. I basically come from a Native American family, born to some parents. Of course, I had to be born to parents, but a mother and a father who both were in the military, so I'm basically a military brat per se, but I didn't get the military brat benefits, trust me, because I was raised by my grandmother and grandmothers. However, you know, been into music my entire life. Like, you know, I did a YouTube video recently talking about that. I've always loved music. I've always loved drums. I always loved it, you know, the church feeling, and the church songs, and the hymns, and the beating of drums, and all these different things. And so When I came of age, I used to basically, and for those who don't know, I was born on Davis Island, which is within Tampa, Florida. And I grew up basically constantly listening to music, whether it was from my great-grandmother's great-grandmother to my mom, growing up listening to all the old school classics, you name it, I listened to it. And so was brought up around a variety of music and different genres of music because of my heritage. And it was just inevitable that I would be in the music industry. But before getting into music industry, I grew up like most cats my age. If you're late 30s, early 40s, Michael Jackson was it, and the music that Michael Jackson created was it. And he would bring the craziest feeling out of you when you was a preteen. And so I used to go around school, right? They would literally want me to go around school dancing. And so I started out dancing, right? And I would go around with my Michael Jackson jacket on, right, and perform in school. And anyone who knows me knows this, right? They know that I used to do this. And that just only led into I liked performing. I liked the feeling that I got when people were happy and I could make people happy and they were impressed by my dancing skills. When I got around about 10 or 11, my interest in music peaked even higher because my mom would have us singing old spirituals like Two Wings and things like that. And that led into eventually me rapping. And so back then, the rappers that we had, was, Curtis Blow, of course, African Bambaataa, all these different pioneers of music that influenced me. And I liked the beat, and I liked the music. And Rapping Duke, and if you guys don't know who Rapping Duke is, he was a legend. You can Google him in Louisiana. When I stayed briefly in Louisiana for a short time when I was younger with my mom. And so he played a large part of me wanting to rap. And so, one basically day, I just told my mom, like, listen, I'm going to rap. I'm going to make music, And, this is, after all of me beating on the walls and, beating everywhere because, we didn't have the finances or the money growing up that I could get everything I want. And so growing up, some of you guys also know that breakdancing was in and the big old beat boxes, the big jukeboxes, the tape cassette boxes, that everybody had, like the bigger the radio, the bigger sound you got, right? So I didn't have that. My grandmother couldn't afford that when my mom was in the service. And so, I just got a little basic tape player for Christmas, that I think came out of maybe Dollar General or Family Dollar or something like that. It was one of those old stores because a lot of them do exist from back then. And, I would do crazy stuff. And I'm jumping around a little bit, so guys, just work with me because I'm trying to piece it all together because once you get at a certain age, it all becomes just jumbled information. But I used to do crazy stuff. Like after getting my radio, I would tear the daggum speaker out cones out and put newspaper up there so I can get that rattling effect, right? And the more I think about it, that was crazy because my mom would be mad at me, man, because I would just tore up a daggum tape player that, she spent her money on, sent it to my grandmother or my, I don't know who bought it, but I know my grandmother presented it with me. But I used to do stuff like that. So I decided to, I wanted to rap, and one thing that I always say my mom did was support me in my music. And so when I decided to rap, I put out my first song. And when I did this, guys, let me tell you something. First song that I put out, which was called Love Is Not a Toy, literally. And now what did a 12-year-old know about love at that time outside of just having crushes, which I did? I remember recording it in the studio, and my mom had a friend, his name was Andre Walker, and he played in a band, and I think the band name was Sensitivity, I think. And I recorded it, and I remember I remember the ADATs, I remember the reel-to-reel, because I still have the first reel-to-reel guy. I kept my reel-to-reel that I had, and I recorded my song, Love Is Not a Toy. And from there, my mom actually financed my first cassette tape, and I would go to radio stations, you know, and at the time in Tampa, there was a radio station called WTMP, and would do interviews, you know what I mean? And then we had underground radio stations for those who know Tampa, and that's where it started, you know. And at that time, you know, and I'll be honest with you, at that time, my name was Slippy D, and that's a whole nother story. I got that name from actually playing basketball and slipping and breaking my elbow, okay? So I went by Slippy D. And for, you know, those who want to know where the D comes from, is because my first name started with a D before I changed it, my very first name, because I wasn't satisfied with my first name. When I got older, I did change it. But, you know, that's how I got started. And so from there, my first tape led to me working with my godfather, who and my cousin, his name is Daryl Underwood, and he had Underwood Records, and he was producing a group. He produced several different groups, actually. He was producing, well, no, let me back up. He actually used to be a promoter in Tampa, and he would promote and bring in different artists and promote those shows, you know. So I got a chance to meet, like, the real guys, you know what I mean? Like, the real guys, when I say the real guys, like MCADE and Chubb Rock and all these guys that were popular at the time. And I'm skipping so much. Oh my God. Cause I almost forgot that me and my sister had a group. We had a group called the Nugget Crew, before that. So you guys gotta forgive me, man. You know, the older you get, a lot of stuff you omit. But, me and my sister started rapping, my older sister, Cheryl, and, we had a group called the Nugget Crew, before that, before my godfather. And my sister was big on gold, and for, you know, you guys who are my age, you know, it was the thing back then, the big gold chains and all this other stuff. And so she loved gold nuggets. So we basically were a brother and sister group, and we basically walked around with a bunch of gold on our necks and gold nuggets, you know. And eventually my sister got older and started having family and friends. And so I, like I said, got with my godfather and was with him and learning the music business per se, and, you know, how promotion went and things like that. And he eventually decided to create his first record label, Underwood Records. And he had signed several artists over the years, one being MC Gator. He had the Party Boys and Quad Force, which I became a part of, started out as a dancer, and then, you know, started doing music. Yes, and I made that transition from doing my own music to dancing, because back then, you know, to be a Pop the D Boy was the ish, right? So, you know, and I know you guys are going to be laughing at me, but hey, this is the backstory. I'm giving you the backstory. Anyway, left the, you know, Party Boys Quad Force. We dropped a couple albums under Attitude Records, which was our distributor. I think Jeff Cohen was the CEO, and he was out of Jacksonville. And that led me to meeting so many different guys and great friends that I came to call friends, from the 69 Boys to Tag Team to doing shows with Heavy D and Salt and Pepper, who I got a lot of great information from when I was younger, to eventually working with 2 Live Crew through Disco Rick and the Dogs, and got a chance to meet so many guys, you know, Chris and JT Money and all these guys growing up. And I was jittery. I don't even know if they remember me, man. I was so young at the time. But all those experiences led into me venturing out on my own and being picked up by one of my relatives, one of my cousins, LC Sneed. And LC Sneed was literally my cousin, and he worked for Warner Brothers. And I think he dealt with, at the time, I think he dealt with, I think he was either A&R or he dealt with promotion for Warner Brothers, but he did it for like so long. I think when he retired, he passed away, because he was running the record label, which was Bound Sound Records, him and Jonathan Black out of Miami. And so I signed with LC, and a partner of mine, we signed as Skin to Win. and we were basically doing shows and we released songs and stuff like that. And then at that time, Sly was doing shows as well. Sly was playing the saxophone, and he was doing music, playing the saxophone. He was a jazz player, actually. Sly was a jazz player, and he went to school for music and all this other good stuff. But anyway, so me and this guy, Shane, we created Skin to Win, and we put out a single called Lap Dance. It was the very first lap dance, of course, because, you know, here I just come out of the whole Two Live Crew, Party Boys era, where everything was explicit. And, you know, of course, Lap Dance would be that song for me. And you mind you, I'm still fairly young, and now at this time I'm going by the name Mad Dog. And so put the song out, me and him. It was the first and only song that we really did together. We did a bunch of shows, though, which was the fun part. And then I put out my own single called Slang That Bottom. And forgive me, I'm in the office with my children in the next room waiting on me to finish with my wife. Well, she's actually taking care of some business for me. But too much information, SG. Anyway, put out a song called Slang That Bottom with a friend of mine called Devastator. And most of you guys might know Devastator. If you heard of him, he was super producer at that time for Miami Bass. He was working with Two Live Crew. He did Shake What Your Mama Gave You for JT Money. He did, Kilo. Who was it that did that song? Half Pint. He did some songs for Half Pint, you know, who had a song, Half Pint, Want You to Hold That Leg Up. He did a ton of stuff, and so I got the opportunity to work with Devastator. And at that time, he was going by Devastator X. His real name is Kenneth Terry. I think it was Terry, yeah. And was my best friend for a while because he gave me the ins and outs of the music industry, and he taught me so much, and he put me in, you know, real relationships with artists. You know what I mean? Like, he literally put me in contact with the guys who helped me hone in on my songwriting, how to rap, how to approach the music, how to approach the beat, you know, all of the different things, man. He literally gave me that science, and I can never forget Devastator. You know, I gotta find out where he's at. But anyway, so fast forward, the song got put out. Matter of fact, it got put out, and my first sync placement came through that song, Slang That Bottom, because it was literally on one of the biggest movies out that came out, which was Bring It On. I don't know if you guys remember the little white girl. I think it was Alicia Silverstone. She came out, and she's not young no more. But she had a movie out that was very large, her and Stacey Dash. And so that was my very first sync placement job, which I did not do properly because it was quite some time, guys, before I even understood that I was supposed to be making money off that stuff, because I was so accustomed to just making money off of my shows, right, and looking for royalty checks. But you can't get a royalty check if you don't have your PRO stuff together and you're not letting your PRO know that you have music placed, which I did not know at that time. I did not know that the music was synced or placed on TV. So I lost a ton of revenue on that, guys, literally. But that's neither here nor there. It was a learning experience that allowed me to be able to be the person I am now and tell you guys what I'm teaching you now. So, you know, fast forward, me and Sly got together. Later on, as I was transitioning out of music, I was pretty much tired, fed up, because I was going through these growing pains of not making money and getting my placements. And at that time, Sly was just getting into the music industry real heavy. He was working with a guy named Baleo Muhammad, who was a friend of his, and he was ghostwriting, basically, for Baleo Muhammad. And, you know, so much could be said about that. But me and Sly teamed up because I had this experience. He knew I knew, you know, somewhat of the music business and promotion and stuff like that. He also knew that I had the Miami bass flavor and style still embedded in me from my experience. And so we decided as family to, you know, create the Peacemakers, which was a representation of where we was in our life with becoming conscious and awoke and, you know, trying to do what was right by the universe. And so the Peacemakers was born. And, of course, there's so much more to that backstory, but I'm not trying to be here for a week giving it to you guys. But we created the Peacemakers, and we, you know, were working with several different people in the industry that, you know, was really pivotal to the creation of the Peacemakers and the success that we had. But none more important than us learning and understanding that it was just a matter of time for us. We believed that it was not just our skill set that would make it. We believe that there was a universal law in place, that the universe was lined up for us, you know, literally for us to be successful. There was no possible way that I had all this experience in the music industry and Sly had all this experience in the industry and was blessed by the ancestors to be put in that position with Baleo Muhammad. The thing was, like I said, was how was we eating? Because that was the thing. We saw everyone else growing and prospering off of late night sessions and things that we was doing and tracks that we were making. But we weren't, you know what I mean? We weren't eating, you know what I mean? Whatever eating we did do, it was, you know, being able to go and pay some bills and then, you know, take wifey out to splurge on, you know, maybe some dinner or something. But it wasn't nothing that, you know, had us driving Mercedes Benzes or living in mansions. You know, we still had a real big struggle. And all that happened while being in Tampa. And it was so much more to it. But eventually, me and Sly moved into Georgia, and that move catapulted us staying together for a while and having the grind, you know, of being brothers and trying to make it work, being each, you know, being of each other and for each other. And so, you know, everything that we did was shared, you know, whatever hustles we had, whatever money we bought in, it was shared because it was about feeding our babies. And we understood, you know, I mean, that the world was going to be against us, but we also understood that as long as we had each other, you know, we could do this, you know what I mean? It wasn't an issue. We just all had, we both had to play our part. And then we had other people that we, you know, bought in that was, you know, some of Sly's old friends that he grew up with and people that he had met over the years and relationships that he had built and vice versa, you know. However, what was real pivotal to us was knowing that we needed to understand the business better. And so as I learned, you know, marketing promotion, which I was great at because it's so much more to my backstory I didn't share. You know, Sly started understanding publishing and was understanding, you know, what his worth was as a songwriter and how we could use that for us. And so eventually what became evident was that we needed to have clarity on the music business, and in order for us to be successful, we really needed to have that clarity on the music business, while at the same time, you know, having all these great placements, you know, because at that time we were working and had worked for a lot of different people, you know, Jessica Simpson, JoJo, the OJs, Donnell Jones, Jaheim, a ton of placements that, you know, through Sly's connections and whatnot, we were getting that was, you know, again, you know, paying bills, but it wasn't something that was putting us over that threshold or top. And then Sean Kingston happened. We got opportunity to write for Sean Kingston. And the Sean Kingston project was something different. It was next level for us because it got leaked. And it blew up so fast that there was no real time to real adjust for nobody. Like, I don't even think the labels and them really was expecting the Sean Kingston, A Beautiful Girl, to go as far as it went. But it did. And when it did, you know, things changed for us slightly. You know, monetarily things changed. Things got a lot better. And as, you know, these projects that we were doing for others came into play, of course, we was working constantly with various of people, you know what I mean, a variety of people over the years. And so, you know, my part became one simply, you know, getting our project off the ground, which was the Peacemakers, and, you know, putting out our own album at the time, which was a conscious awoke album for those who were, you know, conscious and awoke. So, you know, we dropped some great music that was relevant to today, but just did it in a way that was conscious, and it was well received. And so, you know, we sold a lot of albums off that, and it helped keep the bills and lights going. And eventually, you know, what happened was, just make a long story short, at some point through all of our efforts, you know, there became an opportunity to work with Dr. Dre. And I think because a lot was going on at that time in Dre's life, you know, Warren G was at this time, unbeknownst to us, you know, he was going through his thing and was having issues. And I think Warren was really the go-to guy for Dre at that time when it came to a lot of referencing and writing, you know, him and DOC. You know, but of course, that's behind the scene type information we didn't find out till later on. But lo and behold, got opportunity to work with Dre. Sly was in California and, you know, gave me that call, right? He gave me the call and was like, listen, bro, it's on. And at that time, I was in Macon, Georgia, working out of our studio that we had on, I think it was it Houston Avenue? I think it was on Houston Avenue. We had our studio there, which is also where I met my wife. And basically, from there, you know, it was all downhill, you know. He wound up coming out to Georgia, was like, you know, he really didn't give me too much information, was just like, listen, need you in California, let's get it, it's time to go, let's work. And basically, you know, me and my wife basically left everything and went to California. Can't make that up, literally, you know. But what we did, we drove to California, to be honest. We didn't fly. We drove because I wanted to do a cross-country trip. It was my first time going to California, and I really wanted to enjoy the moment. And through that, we got a chance to see so much. Got a chance to, you know, visit different tribes, and which is, of course, my thing. We got a chance to drive through Big as Hell, Texas. And then I got a chance to see the Grand Canyon, which is one of the things that I wanted to do. It was on my bucket list, and I've done it. But wanted to see the Grand Canyon, and we did all those things, you know. And then we got to California, and really, things really picked up, and just, yeah, it was a great experience, great time. And there's so much more to this story, guys, of course, but I'm not going to share all of it right now with you, man. I just wanted to give you guys a story to me, my life, so you'll know who you're dealing with, and gave you a small premise of our lives and how we came to be, and how I became the Peacemakers, and how I became SG-1 from the Peacemakers. And I just think that backstories are so important when you're getting a chance to know someone and you're putting your trust in someone to teach you the proper way to get your business together. You know what I mean? I think it's so important that guys get a chance to know me and at least hear a portion of my backstory and understand that there was nothing special about us. You know, I have plenty of musicians in my family. I'm related to a lot of musicians, some of the people that are classics for me, or the old heads. But more than anything, just that we were just like you, you know. And yes, I've started in music quite some time and for a very long time. But I want you to understand that it was not until we got into our 30s that we found success. And it was a long time in the making, but eventually it did happen. But it only happened because of us becoming informed and us putting in the work and making the sacrifices and being for and by each other. And eventually it popped off. And it was one of the things that and let me just add this. It was our relationship as brothers is one of the things that Dre told me privately about. He admired, because I, you know, again, I didn't know Dre's story. I didn't know he lost his brother. You know, he said, you know, it was something that him and his brother had. And so it has meant so much to me, and it told me so much to, you know, got a chance to really get an insight to Dre and who he was, and what drove him as well. However, all right, guys, well, listen, you know, I'm going to wrap this podcast up, and I appreciate you guys listening and getting a chance to know me and getting a chance to know where I come from and my story, man, you know, and what made me SG1. I hope it wasn't too long and drawn out in detail, but, you know, I thought it was just appropriate to give the, or make the first episode of this podcast one where you guys can truly get a chance to know me, because truly, unless you got on the phone with me and we've talked personally, you don't know this part about me. And like I said, there's so much that I omitted out of that conversation, and so much I will continue to omit for a while until I decide to write my book. You got to write that book, but I'm not ready to write my book because I still have so much life to live and left. And you only write the book in the autobiography when you think you're getting ready to die. You got to pull a Quincy Jones on the ass, right? So thank you guys for listening to this particular episode. And I promise you, man, this particular episode was a special one. It's going to be the first one. And the rest of them won't be like this, okay? It won't be just dreary talk about me, talking about myself and my, you know, my past, you know, even though some of my past is pertinent to teaching you guys what I need to teach you and what I'm trying to relate to you when it comes to the music industry. However, I appreciate you guys listening, and don't forget to visit some of our sponsors at the bottom. Don't forget to click on that DistroKid link, and much love if you want to show support, because it helps us keep these things going. I don't want to be taking money out my children's mouth, or excuse me, money out my children's pocket, or food out their mouth to help people who may or may not find what we have interesting or worthy enough to even listen, you know. But so if you find that this podcast and everything that we're doing is something that you want to support, you can support for as little as a dollar. It doesn't matter. I just appreciate whatever you give. But with that said, man, always remember I live by the philosophy, always, as I was told by a relative of mine that has been doing music for quite some time, that music is life and music is business. Music is always around us. So, with that said, we're out.